Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
And welcome to episode 180 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Bex. Not as if I haven't seen enough of you already this week, but...
Oh, cheers. That makes me feel really welcome. Thanks a lot.
You're always welcome. It's always lovely to see you.
Good backpedalling.
How are you doing?
I'm completely awake, yeah. I've had definitely enough sleep in the last 4 days.
Of course you have. Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yes, for those of you that don't realise, this is the first podcast after we've both been at MCM London Comic Con for the last 3 days. It is now Monday we're recording this. So, yes, both somewhat con-lagged, I think. Slightly.
Yeah, absolutely peachy. Perfectly awake. Didn't fall asleep on the tube at all on the way back an hour ago. It's fine.
Oh, well done. Yes. Well, at least you got off of the right stuff, I hope. So
I did. It's fine. I was going to the end of the line. It was fine.
Yeah, always useful. Yes. So before we get into Comic-Con, anything else you want to bring up?
One of the things I just spotted looking in the brochure for Comic-Con, which I really should have read at Comic-Con, a very useful map in it. Mortal Engines comes out at the 8th of December. I'm really looking forward to that. Have you seen the trailer for that one?
Yes, I've seen the trailer for it. They were actually showing the first 20 minutes, I think, they were actually showing at the show.
Right, fine. Another thing I missed.
Yeah.
So there was so much to see. It was absolutely ridiculous. The book is brilliant.
Yeah, this is Peter Jackson's new film, isn't it? So the trailer looks immense for it. And they were showing, I think, the first 20 minutes of it. And they were in the cinema truck because not content with having three or four theatres, they also have a separate cinema truck. I was actually talking to the guy there, and apparently the reason they have a cinema truck is because a lot of that sort of footage is encoded. So the normal projectors in the theatres aren't able to show it because you need a proper encodable cinema projector to show it. So they have to have a separate cinema truck purely for showing those sort of preview things. The only problem with that is it's quite small. So it's very difficult to get seats in there because I was asking about the Mortal Engines thing and he said, yeah, we've pretty much booked up. And that was like by the end of the Friday. So,
oh, that's cool. Well, I'm not important enough to have managed to sneak in if I hadn't booked in advance. So I feel slightly less bad about missing it. But the book is awesome. It's Philip Reeve. It's a quartet of books. I've only read the first one, but it's a futuristic London, but it's sort of a giant metaphor because cities literally walk around and move.
Yeah.
And cities eat towns.
Yeah.
And strip them for resources and things. So it's kind of a giant metaphor for the spreading of cities and industrialization of the world.
Yeah.
I think it's technically a young adult book, but it's very, very well written and well put together. And the cast looks brilliant too. So when I saw the trailer for that came out, I don't know how I'd missed it, but I had no idea they were making a film for it. Saw the trailer come out for it and thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be brilliant.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that one so much.
Does look like it's going to be pretty amazing. But yes, that's out later this year. So I'm definitely one for the cinema, I think that. It being big Peter Jackson film, and you know how good Peter Jackson is when it comes to those big epic stuff. So definitely looking forward to that. I mean, we've been into Comic-Con already, but the couple of other things that popped up this week, which I should mention, which I managed to play and watch a little bit of when I got back last night while I was slumped on my sofa. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina came out and got the first couple of episodes of that watched. I would advise anybody to watch it to watch those two episodes back to back because I found the first episode a little bit slow and only picked up in the last sort of 5 or 10 minutes, but picked up quite a lot. Basically, they introduced Richard Coyle quite right at the end of that first episode, and he's brilliant, and that sort of picks everything up. It was definitely shot as a sort of 2-hour opener, I think, that it feels like one giant episode. So I really enjoyed it by the end of the second episode. I wasn't so sure sort of at the end of the first episode, but the end of the second episode I thought was really good. It's suitably dark and creepy, and not quite as light and camp as bits of Riverdale are. It's darker than that. I thought it was a really interesting adaptation. So I'm looking forward to watching a little bit more of that. And the other thing that came out was Red Dead Redemption 2, which of course came out on Friday, the day we went down to London Comic Con. So I didn't manage to get to play that until I got back, and then had to wait 2 hours while it installed everything. But
Just keep getting thrown by, because obviously the hashtag for it is RDR2.
Yes.
Being dyslexic, this hashtag keeps throwing me every time I see a tweet about it.
Yes. Aren't the droids you're looking for, I think. So yeah, I've played through like the opening bit of it basically. So I mean, it looks beautiful, it looks stunning. You're sort of in a very snowy wasteland when you start, and it's just the training bits of how all the controls work and that sort of thing. But very cinematic, really quite stunning. We'll talk, I'm sure, a little bit more about that as the weeks go on and various other people come on and have managed to play it. But yes, very impressed so far, so I'm playing a bit more of that. But as we mentioned at the start, the big thing this week, of course, has been Comic-Con. So what were your favourite bits other than Comic Village? We'll leave that for a bit because I know that's your favourite bit anyway. But other than that, what else were your favourite bits this year?
Apart from being in a place with about 120,000 people, I had at least six things in common with. apart from the after parties from which we are all still recovering, where yes. All the cosplayers do the Macarena and Wigfield Saturday night. Nothing yes. Like hundreds of cosplayers doing silly dances all in unison to bring a community together. It was really good this year. I really, really enjoyed myself. I didn't get to see sort of a lot of the guests and the panels. Sadly, I always end up kind of missing out on those things with the sort of the filming and the schedule that I'm running for doing my own stuff. But it was a really good mix of stuff, I found. It was all laid out really, really well. I actually found something I could eat as a small highlight for me. There's now a stall that sells jacket potatoes. I could eat something. Yes. Which was pretty awesome. That giant skull, the giant dragon skull they had. The Game of Thrones stand.
There was a lot more sort of. There was a lot more specific TV things there this year. So there was a big Game of Thrones stand. They had the throne, which they bought repeatedly many times. So, but they had a Game of Thrones stand that also had this giant dragon skull, and they had some people.
It was huge. I met a lady that tried to climb inside it. She told me she wanted to be inside because you could pretty much have stood inside it and looked out the eyeball. Yeah, or the eye socket, rather. Obviously, you couldn't look out the eyeball. You can tell we're slightly tired here. It was enormous. And I like the fact that they had giant standees and stuff like that. There were lots of good photo opportunities to do silly things with your friends. I met loads of incredible cosplayers. There's some good photos of me pretending to attack a Harley Quinn with a hammer. I seem to do that once every Comic-Con now, and doing silly poses with a giant MCM sign. The layout was good. The way they'd kind of grouped stalls I found really helpful this time. Found it much easier to find things. The signage was all better, because that's one of the things that has always been frustrating about Comic-Con is you spend all weekend trying to look out for things and you'll miss things. And I found that the maps and the signage were really, really awesome and helpful. And the show guide was really great, so that you didn't spend any of your time trying to find stuff. You could just look up where things were and spend all your time enjoying it. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of individual stands for specific things, like the BBC were there for the first time this year with a specific Doctor Who stand and had a TARDIS and everything. That looked completely awesome. I thought that was really good.
There was a giant steampunk store which had a big steampunk TARDIS and a steampunk R2-D2 and things like that. That was pretty cool. They had a YouTuber and Twitch area this time as well, which I thought was quite cool. That was near the gaming area. I saw more indie games as well in the games area. It was a good mix.
They had a really large gaming area, I thought, this year as well. I mean, Nintendo had taken up if you've been to EGX or pretty much anything, the last sort of few months, that entire Nintendo stand that they seem to travel around with, that whole stand seemed to be there. So huge Nintendo area, and like you say, they got some of the indie games there. A sort of back third of the South Hall was just all games as far as I could see. I thought that was kind of cool,
and I just appreciated them having, they had a mix of stuff that was kid friendly games like your Splatoons and these kind of things. They had newer games and more grown-up games, plus obviously the indie. And it just, I thought they had a really nice balance and mix of it, and it was all spread out enough that even though there were literally, you know, probably 120,000 people, you know, Saturday was ridiculous, I didn't feel as sort of hemmed in a lot of these places. So I thought that it just seemed to be, just seemed to run really, really smoothly this time. I'm trying to think what else. I saw so much that it's just kind of all, it's all become a blur into one. It's just a blur of awesome now. Lots of good independent geeky clothing stalls. Cakes with Faces, I always go and check out for their awesome pun and gaming based stuff. Geeky Clean and their geeky soaps. And because we had so much sort of Critical Role stuff, because Critical Role has blown up incredibly.
Well, yeah, I mean, Critical Role, I think, even took MCM by surprise. For those of you who don't know, Critical Role is a weekly live-streamed Dungeons & Dragons game, basically. And it's a group of voiceover actors, and it's sort of run by one guy and a bunch of his friends, and they're all kind of people that do voices and stuff. And they came along, I think they started coming along earlier this year, and it's just grown and grown. Grown to the point that we were supposed to be getting them up in the press room to do like a talk, and they actually cancelled the press interview saying we just can't get them away from the floor, there'll be mutiny if we take them away from the floor.
I think I saw three people on the train in on the Friday with Critical Role t-shirts on.
Crazy. I mean, because they did a panel on the Saturday and you couldn't move, it was standing room only when you went into the panel, it was nuts. And they were supposed to do on the Sunday, they were supposed to do a thing on the little MCM live stage, which is it's a tiny little stage that's in the sort of middle, so you can kind of walk past and just stop and watch. And they do some of the guest interviews on there, and they actually moved that panel to the big main stage as well.
You'd have to, otherwise you'd just end up with the whole of the middle of Comic-Con with people straining to hear. Yeah. It's awesome to see, because I love D&D, I play D&D, and there's always been a small contingency of kind of D&D stuff and lovely dice and bits and pieces you can get in board games at MCM. But it was just awesome. I could just stand on the train and be just like, so I'm a level 3 Tabaxi sorcerer. What are you? And people could just answer me. And that was kind of cool, because it was like, it's something that I felt there'd been less of the board gamey people and the D&D people at MCM in recent years, with so much kind of film and TV stuff. Mm. So it was kind of cool to be able to get super geeky over stats of what are your cantrip spells, you know? And that was really good fun, and it was just something fun and varied. So that was pretty awesome to see, and brilliant to see that their live streaming D&D game is doing so well, because it's good fun.
Yeah, I mean, D&D generally seems to have gone through a major resurgence over the last sort of 18 months, and I've been noticing more and more people getting back involved with it, because I don't play currently, but I used to play when I was much younger. And
Join us.
I'd be very happy to get back into it. But I think Critical Role are partly responsible for that resurgence, I think, as well, because they've just blown up so big. It's quite phenomenal. I'm really happy for them. They're doing so well.
A wider range of younger people.
Yeah.
Bring them into the fold. Because D&D is such a wonderful thing. It brings people together all around a table. You can play it seriously. You can play it more jokingly. You can do so much with it. You can do short, small campaigns, or you can do really epic things that you play with your friends, or just go join groups as a way of, you know, meeting new people and play campaigns that last for years. It's one of those things that I was always hoping would come back. I'm ahead of the curve. I was hoping it would come back. I had no hand to play at all in helping it come back, but nevertheless, I was willing D&D to make a bit of a comeback, because it's always something I'd miss. And since I got back into it myself, and obviously, you know, I don't know if you remember the race classes, but a Tabaxi is a cat person,
right?
I'm a purple cat.
You are supposed to role play and not just be what you are in real life, you know, with these things.
Well, it's a 21-year-old dude sorcerer that breathes light to a certain extent. I mean, I wish, you know, I could breathe lightning in real life. Let's be fair, that's a bit of wish fulfillment going on there. That would just speed up, you know, cooking and getting rid of your enemies and, you know.
Yes,
but very true. Yeah, it is definitely slightly removed from my actual self. But
a little, maybe.
But it's good fun, and I'm glad to see a lot of younger people as well getting involved in it, because so much stuff, much as I love online gaming and much as I love these things, there's a lot of people being far apart.
Yeah.
And D&D is one of those things. For all the people that want to be together in a room and do something preposterous, D&D is the answer.
Definitely. So that's brilliant to see them doing so well and to see that coming back. Your friends from the Saber people, Silver Saber, were there as well, I noticed.
Yes, of course. They are always there giving out free lessons, raising money for charity and generally spreading the word about the Force. It's funny because actually a lot more people have gone dark side at the Silver Sabers, because there's two primary teachers, one that teaches in London and one that teaches in Milton Keynes, and generally the London lot are all light side apart from me.
Well, obviously
the lot from Milton Keynes for Silver Sabres are generally dark side, and they were dark. And I've noticed more and more of the London guys are slowly turning to the dark side. But they were doing displays as well, and it's also, I saw a tiny little kid, she must have been about 6, dressed as Rey with a little lightsaber, doing a lightsaber class and learning the Tai Chi moves, because it's all Tai Chi based, and it's real sword fighting with sabers, and it was just utterly adorable. And next door was a little kid dressed as Darth Vader, actually. I'm assuming they were related.
Yeah, it is incredibly cute to see the kids. They're basically doing a kind of younglings sort of thing, and they've got them all doing the saber moves. It's absolutely adorable. Great to see that. Going back into the TV stuff, there was a lot of TV premieres this time around. Again, not that either of us, I think, managed to see any of this stuff.
I missed all of them. They were great.
Yeah, because they did a preview of Curfew, which is this new car racing show that's coming to Sky One fairly soon. That's stars Sean Bean. It's got an amazing cast. It's Sean Bean, Adrian Lester. There's a whole bunch of other people in there. But they were doing a panel, I think, and a sort of preview of that. I don't know whether they showed a whole episode or whether it was just bits they were showing, but that looked fantastic. And they did a premiere of Outlander, which comes back this week, I think. That's back on sometime in the next sort of 7 days. So they did a preview episode of the first episode of the new season. There was a preview of The Last Kingdom, which is back on Netflix fairly soon. People were going, Netflix? Why is it on Netflix? Because that's a show that was, this is the sort of Saxon Viking show, the one that isn't Vikings. And it's sort of all told from the Saxon side of things.
Hashtag not the show that's called Vikings. Yeah.
It ran on BBC Two over here for the first couple of seasons. And basically, it was a co-production between BBC America and BBC Two. Then BBC America dropped out and Netflix stepped in. So it was BBC Two and Netflix. And then the BBC dropped out entirely and Netflix took it over. So the third season is purely on Netflix now. So that's coming back soon. But they did a preview of that. They did some press stuff, I think, as well for that. But we were kicked out of the press room so they could do a big press conference for it, because we weren't told about that one until afterwards, which is kind of annoying. So there's that as well. The press interviews are interesting this year because they dump them all on the Friday. Usually we spend Saturday in the press room, but they decided to do them all on Friday. Didn't give us a whole lot of notice that they were doing them all on Friday, so I actually missed the first couple of them because I had to come down from the north to get to London. We have got interviews which will be going up this week, most of them video interviews. Cast of Shadowhunters, which we're talking about the last couple of episodes and the series in general, did an interview with those guys. Nolan North and Richard McGonagall, who are Drake and Sully from the Uncharted series. We've done Nolan North a million times before, but it's the first time that Richard McGonagall's been there, and he's amazing. He's got one of those voices you could sit and listen to for hours. You want him to be like record bedtime stories and stuff, because he's got that just a wonderful, wonderful voice. So
man crush then.
Oh yeah, totally. I love that guy. He's amazing. Paul McGann was in as well. We're actually going to put that interview on later, because that wasn't a video interview, we just did audio recording for that. So Paul McGann, of course, Ninth Doctor, I think, the one that did the TV movie and then sort of lived on in the audio stuff afterwards. So I believe technically he's the longest serving Doctor, because he was the Doctor while there was a big break while it wasn't on TV. So I think technically he's still the longest serving Doctor.
It's all timey-wiminess anyway. Yes. I don't question it.
Vic Mignogna, who we've done a few times before, but he's always fabulous. He's Broly in the Dragon Ball series, Edward Elric in Full Metal Alchemist, and plays Kirk in Star Trek Continues. He's always really good. Steve Kandaras and Catherine Sutherland, who are two of the Power Rangers. They were really good fun as well. Angus McKinney's, who is a sort of gold leader in Star Wars. He's probably what he's best known for. He's done a bunch of other things as well, like Hellboy and that sort of stuff. That was a really interesting interview. It's one of those things that probably won't get that many clicks when I put it up, but he's really quite fascinating because he's been in the business since he was like 1975. So he's got a load of experience and he's just a jobbing actor. And just talking about working with different directors and, you know, he worked with Del Toro, obviously, on Hellboy and just various things about the industry. Really fascinating, really lovely. Angus McKinney is his name, but that interview will go up later. Moving on to your favourite bit of the show, comic books, the indie comic book area. So I was present for a couple of the interviews you did, including the one that I can't wait to see the edit of, Moon.
That's interviews in inverted commas, that one. They were so sorry the next day. they were so apologetic.
It was hilarious, that interview, though. The guys from Moon, who Moon is an amazing book anyway. To be fair to the guys, it was very last thing on a Saturday as the show was closing. It had been manic all day, but the pair of them are lunatics anyway. So yes, that was very jumbled and disorganized, that interview, but very, very, very funny. So I'm waiting to see what you do with the edit.
I think my favorite point was we get about 6 minutes in and I say, can we please talk about the comic Moon now? And Steve just looks over and goes, Moon? Never heard of it. And I'm just there, like, you can just see the exasperation on my face. I'd wanted to, because it's so rare that they're both in one place. Mm. I'd started to think maybe they were the same person, you know.
Yeah, this is the writer
and the artist in the same place at the same time is actually quite rare, because they're both comedians, they both work, and Dan still does a lot of stage performances, and that's why he wasn't there on Sunday. He was on stage and performing and so forth. So getting them both in the same place at the same time is really rare. That was only possible on the Saturday. Of course, in the daytime, they're absolutely swamped. They're working really hard. I came to interview them. They weren't there. I did another interview, came back, and that was right at the end of the day, and they'd obviously been awake too long. That's all I can say. Too much coffee had occurred. They are amusing and wonderful people, and I hope, if nothing else, that interview shows the sort of level of comedy and silly that goes into the Moon, as if the premise wasn't silly enough. I could do the premise because I've stood around that stall so often that I've sold many comic books to people standing next to me when they're talking to someone else. Generally about 4,000 years ago, people tried to summon a demon, accidentally summoned the Moon. The Moon is just a dude with a moon for a head, and since that point, every daytime he's not needed in the sky anymore. He comes down, puts on a suit, and fights ridiculous comedy crime with his friend Shades, who always wears sunglasses. And it's very, very silly. And they've just finished the final comic of the first arc, Comic 6, which came out in a multi-variant cover, limited edition with some chromium bits. I was like, ooh, shiny. and I went back the next day to pick up the remaining comics for Moon, because obviously they tend to come out every MCM, so I didn't have the last few. And they were so sorry that they gave me the last few issues. And I was like, I'm trying to help people find your comic so you can sell more copies of your amazing comic.
Yes.
Being really silly on camera is completely sabotaging the interview where I'm trying to help you sell your comic. Then giving me a couple of issues of your comic is like the most opposite thing to what I'm going for here. But thank you. the other comic that we interviewed when you were around, I've got the comics next to me so I can pick them up. Because when I went to interview Moon, they weren't there, despite the fact they were supposed to be there. So the lovely Candy that helps on their stall said, you know what, there's a better comic you should be talking to. Abandoned the stall and took us around the corner to a brilliant comic called NPC-T.
Yes.
NPC is in non-player character and T is in the drink.
Yes.
Which is about a demon, a sorcerer, and a human who decide to stop adventuring and set up a tea shop in Cardiff. And
I love this.
It's absolutely charming and wonderful. I can't wait to put the interview up with her. I'm going to do her one before Moon, because she was lovely and helpful and funny and wonderful. And she didn't sabotage me, so Moon can wait.
Yes.
They're going to listen to this now and, you know, they're going to think it's completely justified, to be fair.
I think so.
Yeah, NPCT is beautiful and really, really sweet. The artwork's lovely, done in very limited colour palette. Vaguely anime-ish kind of manga looking, but not really. But it's just this lovely, sweet, small story with a lot of humour. She also makes the tea from the menu in the tea shop.
Yes.
And gives it stats. So, tying back to earlier conversation, you can use the tea to have effects on your characters in D&D.
Yes.
Which is
genius. Just genius.
Pretty, pretty damn awesome. I picked up a copy of Fearscape,
right,
which is pretty awesome as well. It's based on the idea that there's another world adjacent to our own where our fears manifest. Mm. And every sort of, I think it's 100 years or so, a muse is taken through and they figuratively battle humanity's greatest fears and then come back and write stories about it. And that's how humanity kind of copes with the sort of fears that we have as a society, except that this time they've accidentally taken through someone who is a plagiarist charlatan.
Right.
And so it goes a bit wrong.
Right.
And the artwork in that is gorgeous. So Fearscape is definitely one to check out.
I had a flip through that. They're just absolutely beautiful, the artwork in that. Who's the artist's name? It's Ryan something, isn't it?
Ryan O'Sullivan is the author.
The author, right, okay.
Yeah, it's a team of four of them, and I'm afraid I cannot remember which is the name that is,
right,
is the artist. Right. I think, in fact, maybe more than one of them.
Because he's got that, and what's the other book? Void something.
Void Trip.
Void Trip, yeah.
Which is an intergalactic road trip with the last two humans trying to find paradise, but they find it halfway through the story, and is paradise actually that great? It's a bit of existential dread and a bit of comedy. So that's a good one. I picked that up at London Film and Comic Con. I picked up Void Trip.
And that's
also a very good book.
Yeah, they're both absolutely beautiful looking books.
I also picked up the next few issues of Cognition,
right,
which is again incredibly beautiful. I do love my minimal color palettes when it comes to my comic books. I have to say that one was pretty awesome. That's a robot with the soul of a human and a rat with the soul of the demon, and they are solving kind of supernatural crimes occurring in a sort of, it's not steampunk, but it's sort of historical alternate world kind of setting.
Right.
Again, exceedingly well written piece of work, and they're really nice guys as well. What's the other one I've had? Punk's Not Dead.
Right.
That was one I spotted from across, you know, sort of walking down one of the rows. I spotted it because of the punk covers just looked like something of the time. It looked contemporary to punk culture. And that's the story of a guy that goes to Heathrow Airport, and there's a ghost of a punk rocker guy who thinks he's Sid Vicious but isn't, who's been stuck in limbo in Heathrow Airport.
Okay, interesting.
And from the point they meet, it turns out that this normal, regular person is the only person that can see this ghost, and they become kind of tethered. They can't go like more than, I think, 30 meters apart.
Right. Interesting.
So they're sort of stuck together. I think he described it as somewhere between punk rock and Coronation Street or something. I did an interview with him. Absolutely lovely. It was the artist that was there. Incredible art. Phenomenal. Took me a minute to figure out if it was done in mixed media and watercolor or digital.
Oh, wow.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Every page, absolutely stunning. I dread to think how much time it takes to do every panel in that comic.
Yeah.
But there was so much. Comic Village was huge, and I decided to be a crazy masochist on the Friday, and I wanted to do a single take walk round of Comic Village.
Yes.
Film everything in order, just go up and down every aisle saying, I mean, there were so many new people. A lot of it's me going, oh, this looks brilliant. I'm coming back to see this later. But also explaining a bit, showing artwork, showing comics of everyone who was there. Like, literally, it's a 48 minute video.
Yeah.
And I filmed that, top and tailed it with a little intro and outro, exported it. 2 hours later, came back, realized I'd spelt Comic Village wrong, re-exported it. 2 hours later, again, we were getting near the end of Friday, so I needed to upload it to YouTube because I really wanted it up on the Friday so people coming on Saturday could see where everything was before they got there.
Yeah.
I left my phone tethered to my laptop because the Wi-Fi around the XO area is
terrible.
You're waiting 3 minutes for a tweet to load. Left my phone tethered and went out to the Fox for the after party. Didn't bother to sort of check on my phone till the next day. I thought, I've got plenty of data on my phone. It's just one video file. It's quite big, but it'll be fine. Looked at my phone the next day. Everything was barred.
Oh, no.
I accidentally left my Dropbox sync.
Oh, no.
I was going to pause it. I thought I'd pause it. I clearly didn't pause it. 16 gig of mobile data later, my network had cut me off.
Whoops.
Making communication for the rest of Comic-Con very complicated, and quite an embarrassing phone call with my network provider where I said, I don't understand where all this data gone. Could you please look at this? I think you've made an error. And then her saying, what exactly were you doing with your phone? And was anything running in the background and halfway through the conversation? As I mean, I was very polite through the entire conversation. I thought they were at fault, but I wasn't being rude at all. But realizing I was completely at fault and spending the rest of the conversation going, I'm very sorry, I'm an idiot. I do apologise for all of this, and they kindly gave me a little bit of data to tide me over for the few days before it rolls over. But that was great fun.
Oops.
But I did get the video up on Friday.
Good.
That we can put it up on Geektown and people can watch it if anyone wants to see just the phenomenal amount of talent and varied comic books and artists that you now get at things like MCM.
Yeah, yeah. For the first time in a long time as well, they, as well as having a bunch of really, really talented indie artists, they had a group of very well-known DC Marvel people as well, including people like Frank Miller there this year as well. They really outdid themselves with comic book people.
Yeah, they had Brian Azzaria as well, who I completely missed, who was one of the people responsible for 100 Bullets, which is a brilliant comic.
Yeah, I mean, Frank Miller, Frank Quietly, Chris Claremont, Brian Azzaria, George Maloney, Jimmy Palomi, Klaus Janson. I mean, Tim Sale was there.
Yep, Jim Chung and Frank Cho as well, both awesome guys.
John Marotta Jr.
I kind of said hi to a few people, but it got to the point where there was actually queues for some of the artists, especially one of the artists that does Harley Quinn covers, I believe it was. They're actually queues in Comic Village, which was brilliant to see, because they had mixed some of those bigger guys in with everyone else in Comic Village. So it was all of the artists and creators together for the most part. Frank Miller was probably under lock and key somewhere.
No, I mean, Thank You was out there as well. There were queues all over the place for those guys. I didn't get to
see him or speak to him, but I'm guessing he had a lot of
very popular.
Yeah, a lot of people around him and a lot of commitments with. I'm assuming he was doing panels and talks a lot as well.
Yes,
and that was good. And they were getting some of the slightly smaller guys to do talks and panels on the smaller stages as well, which was really awesome too. Although it meant that sometimes I'd go to interview people and they weren't there. It was still brilliant. And I spend obviously a lot of my time in Comic Village. Definitely, sort of like my entire Friday is normally spent there.
Yeah.
It was definitely good to see, and awesome to see more comics in Comic-Con as well, because I know that's something that, you know, the film and TV stuff's all brilliant and Comic-Con's much bigger than just comics, but some people had felt that there weren't enough comic guests and things, and that was one of the things MECM promised to have this year, was more comic guests as well as film and TV, and they really delivered.
Yeah, totally delivered. I mean, a phenomenal amount of stuff. I mean, we've not even mentioned things like the Pop Asia stand, because they had the whole sort of Asia area and had a stand in. So usually that sort of stage that they do all that sort of stuff is outside, but given the weather this weekend and how cold it was, I'm kind of glad that they moved that one inside for them.
Who was the statue company? There was a statue company with really big diorama statues, and those were utterly incredible.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. And I didn't recognize them. From a distance, I thought it might be Sideshow, but then I got closer and I realized it wasn't. And I didn't take one of their cards, but their work was beautiful.
Yeah. Some incredible stuff there. There was a tattoo section as well, which they were doing live tattooing of people. Well, I'm assuming they were. I didn't get too close, but there were people
just
lying
in case.
just in case I randomly catch a tattoo as I'm going past. But there were people lying down, seemingly having tattoos done live while we're at the show.
There's a massive crossover between the people that go to tattoo conventions and the people that go to Comic-Cons.
I'm sure. Yeah. Just such a ridiculous amount of stuff. It's whether you get round. Well, I mean, you see, we were there like all weekend. You still don't get around everything. So just a phenomenal, phenomenal amount of stuff over the weekend. And of course, the other thing is the cosplay. And I mean, hundreds of various cosplay meetups throughout the weekend, but some phenomenal work as ever. You could see quite a lot of the stuff. We've started posting some of them to Instagram, which is Geektown UK on Instagram, if you want to go and look for that. Saw some great costumes. Anything particular stand out for you?
A couple of my friends, one of which goes under Nodge Cosplay, NOJ Cosplay, they did sort of classic but sort of slightly armoured versions of Jean Grey and Cyclops, complete with like LEDs and the light up visor and everything. And
nice.
That was brilliant, because I didn't even know they were working on that. And there was the incredible armoured Harley Quinn based on the play arts figure.
Katia Fern, her name is.
Katia Fern, that's the one. Yeah, she does some incredible cosplays as well. There was some pro cosplay guests as well. We had Anna Quinn and Candy Valentina.
Yes.
Anna Quinn did an amazing Jessica Rabbit. Did you see that?
I saw that. Yeah, that was
those
posted
heels
on your
and
feed.
That corset and the weight of the wig, like her dedication being that, standing in there, because those heels were phenomenal. She was approximately 100 meters taller than me wearing them. And yeah, they did some awesome outfits, and it's cool to see the cosplayers, the pro cosplayers, getting stands and being there as guests and getting to meet people as well. I love the eclectic mix of everything. So if you wanted to go and just chill with your friends, or just play computer games, or just read some comics, or apparently get a tattoo as well, or people sit outside and have picnics together, or just do loads of photo shoots, you can do, you know, whichever bits of Comic-Con you like, and people can go and have a completely different experience to someone else that's been.
Yeah, totally.
It's so friendly and welcoming and such good fun.
It is wonderful. I mean, I love the variation in the cosplay as well, you know, because you've got obviously loads of people dressing as your Harley Quinns and your Jokers. There's all less Jokers, a few less Jokers and a few less Harley Quinns. You're getting a bit more
variation. It's all Bowsette now. The game is Spot the Bowsette.
Yes,
that's Bowsette. The one that's blown up on social media, the sort of female Princess Peach looking version of Bowser, which is super cute. And I saw four of those on the train on the Saturday on the way in. That's the one that's kind of fun. And I'm assuming they had a meetup for Bowsettes.
I would imagine there was. There was a few kind of interesting, unique ones I spotted. I mean, you've got like from Mega City 1 judges, which are always fun to see. There was one guy dressed as Sideshow Bob, which I thought from The Simpsons, which I thought was brilliant, because how often do you see one of those?
And there was a guy dressed as Lucy from Disenchantment, just wearing a black suit, and then had done on cardboard the head facing in profile and was wearing it as a mask. It worked really well. It's such a simple idea, but it really, really worked.
Yes, I saw a few Disenchantment cosplays. That seems to be going down quite well. One of my favourites, apart from the guy doing Solid Snake, who was basically a pair of legs in combat outfit. I think he had a costume on underneath, but you didn't see him most of the time. He was basically wearing camo legs and had a box which he was carrying around.
Yes. You always hilarious. Get someone doing that one, and it's so much fun.
Green Giant
Green Lantern mashup is always fun. Yeah, a couple of people doing good. That there's a thing that happens at, not at MCM, but at one of the big anime conventions. It's in a hotel, and the hotel has a famously really 80s psychedelic carpet in all the hallways, and a bunch of people make costumes that camouflage them to the carpet. And then kind of military style go across the floor and crawling along on the floor.
That's funny.
It really is. You get people that take this really seriously, and they make wonderful, absolutely screen perfect, movie ready level incredibleness. You get people that just tape toilet roll tubes and cardboard boxes to themselves and write Transformer on it. People that do incredible kind of like the Victorian or steampunk versions of like Disney princesses and characters and things are amazing. Or people that just, dress as a carpet. It's such an awesome community and such great fun.
I mean, I think that's what I love just about the cosplay people, is it is such an open and friendly group of people that you meet there, and ranging from the people that do it professionally to the people that are just kind of, you know, thrown costumes together over a weekend and done sort of an amateur thing, to every level in between. But whatever you want to go as, everybody's always happy to see you. And that's what I absolutely love about it. Two of my favourite guys was a pair of friends who were, sorry if you're listening, but I would say were probably in at least their mid-40s, and dressed up as Desperate Dan and Dennis the Menace. And because you just don't see those sort of British comic books very much. And I thought, just adorable and really sweet. And I love seeing things like that, the sort of slightly more off the wall things that you don't see.
I hope they went up,
because
the artist for Dennis the Menace was there.
I suspect
that. I hope they went up to him. He's funny. He always sort of like waves at me and things. There's a few of those guys who are from the, I don't want to call it like the old guard of comic strip comics, classic comic strip comics. And they're really funny. When I go past with my camera, they always hold things up in front of their face and they sort of go like, you and your camera, and then give me a wave and a smile. They're all absolutely lovely guys. There was a guy who used to dress as, when Pokemon Go was at its sort of height, would dress as one of the Pokestops or the gyms. And then everyone dressed as Pokemon would come and run around him. People see other people dressed as something from their franchise or related franchises, and they will run up and do stuff together. You know, like there were two people, was it last MCM, who were dressed as Bruce Wayne's parents, and whenever they saw a Batman cosplayer, they lied on the floor and pretended to be shot.
Yes, which so was some photos of that. Just funny. I mean, I just love things like that, and you meet such great people. people. And you, particularly if you're going in your own costume as well, you end up chatting with people that are in the same sort of, you know, so if you're in a Batman costume, you'll end up going to and bumping into people with Robin or Nightwing, and they all kind of cluster together and get photos in groups. And you end up making great friends. So honestly, if you're going to one of these things, put yourself in a costume and go, because it's great fun. It's well worth doing. I've got hundreds of photos coming up, which will be going up onto the Geektown UK Instagram feed over the next sort of week or couple of weeks. I'll be drip feeding photos and edits of photos and stuff out on there. So keep an eye out on that for more of them. So I think we've pretty much covered anything on Comic Con. Have you got anything else you want to put in?
No, I think I took up a massive amount of your airspace.
That's all right. That's all the stuff from Comic Con. We should be doing it again in Birmingham next, or I will at least be doing it again in Birmingham next month. So I will look forward to seeing people there. Now we've got a couple of bits of TV and film news. TV and film news stories this week. One of the big stories, Del Toro and Jim Henson have apparently teamed up to make a Pinocchio series for Netflix. This is a stop motion animated series that they're doing, apparently. It's something that Del Toro has been wanting to do for a very, very long time. It's sort of one of his passion projects. And if you're going to do it with anybody, you do it with Jim Henson, really. I think if you're doing stop motion animation, that's got to be the thing to do, right? I guess.
I'm completely sold. I literally don't need to know anything more about this series. It's two incredibly creative, wonderful forces presumably coming together to make something that's going to be much more darker and surreal than Pinocchio would normally be, although it is quite a strange fairy tale, as they often are. But that just sounds amazing, and I'm so glad that Netflix has picked that up, because it's going to be fairly niche, but it's just going to be a work of art. I can't see any way it isn't going to be amazing.
Yeah,
I really hope I'm not proved wrong.
It looks like it's going to be absolutely fabulous. People involved in terms of the animation side of things, you've got people that were involved with Adventure Time, the Fantastic Mr. Fox film, Corpse Bride, the Tim Burton stuff. So, I mean, this just looks like it's going to be quite incredible, I think. They said, in our story, Pinocchio is an innocent soul with an uncaring father who gets lost in a world he cannot comprehend. He embarks on an extraordinary journey that leaves him with a deep understanding of his father and the real world. I wanted to make this movie for as long as I can remember, and the incredible experience we've had on Troll Hunters, I'm grateful that their talented team at Netflix have given me the opportunity of a lifetime to introduce audiences everywhere to my version of this strange puppet turned real boy. So it sounds like it's not going to be like a series, it's going to be a film. But I mean, that's perfectly fine. I think that makes sense. One definitely to look out for, I think, that as a Netflix movie.
I think it's going to be one of those ones that's just going to be Dave McKean's Mirror Mask.
Yeah.
Was a beautiful and mix of all sorts of types of, you know, live action animation and things. And I feel like this is Del Toro and Henson teaming up to make their piece that is akin to that film. And again, a beautiful, surreal, grown-up fairy tale.
Yeah.
I can't wait till they start releasing teasers for that.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be amazing. The other bit of news that came out last week is CBS All Access have given an order to a new Star Trek animated series, which is a comedy, which is not something I think they've ever really done with Star Trek before. They've done like animated shows before, but I don't think there's officially been a comedy before. It's called Star Trek Lower Decks. It's a half-hour animated comedy. It comes from the Emmy award-winning Rick and Morty writer Mike McCannon. There was a quote from Alex Kurtzman, who he's god of all things Trek now at CBS, and he's the person that's bringing the new Picard series and has taken over Discovery since they've had issues with showrunners. So he's basically the god of all things Trek now. He said, Mike won our hearts with his first sentence. I want to do a show about the people who put the yellow cartridge in the food replicator so banana can come out at the other end, was his pitch for it.
It's just, they seem to be getting far more loose with what's okay to be under the Star Trek banner now, because our latest series is, you know, a lot of people are saying that, oh, you know, is Discovery actually Star Trek, and is this, they seem to be much more willing to kind of play with the brand, play with the world, and do a lot more kind of disparate things that to suit all the different fans, because it's like some of Star Trek is very funny, intentionally or not, especially with the original series. And I quite like this idea, which may anger hardcore Trekkies, but I think as long as you see it as a separate thing that has no impact on any of your other Trek stuff, then why not?
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. It's going to focus on the support crew of one of Starfleet's least important ships is the idea. Mike himself is like a massive, massive Trek fan. Apparently his cat's name is Riker. His son's name is Sagan. this is Alex talking about. He says, the man is committed. He's brilliantly funny, knows every inch of every Trek episode. That's his secret sauce. He writes with the pure, joyful heart of a true fan. So, I mean, I think it looks brilliant. And it's not the first time he's been involved with comedy Star Trek stuff as well. He started a Twitter account which was posting episode plots to a fake season of Star Trek The Next Generation, and it was such a hit that Simon and Schuster, the publishing people, hired him to write a reader's guide to a fictitious eighth season of Next Generation called Star Trek The Next Generation Warped an engaging guide to the never aired eighth season.
How do I not own this? That is something I now immediately need to Google. That's brilliant, and that's exactly who you want to be doing comedy Star Trek. Is going to be absolutely by fans for fans. There better be triples. That's all I'm going to say now, just in case they're listening.
There has to be. Surely there has to be. Yeah.
So it'll be criminal not to include at least three triple episodes or an ongoing triple gag, running gag.
There needs to be something. But I mean, I'm very much looking forward to that. At the moment, it's not got a UK pickup, but I would think that's something that Netflix will take. One would imagine, since they have all the other Trek stuff at the moment, apart from the Trek shorts, which is mildly annoying. But they've got everything else, and they're getting the next season of Discovery, which arrives in January. So we'll have to wait and see. But hopefully that will end up popping up on there when it arrives. But one definitely to keep an eye out for. It's called Star Trek Lower Decks. So that's all the news for this week. Next, we'll move on to the interview. The interview this week, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, comes direct from Comic-Con. It is with the actor Paul McGann, who many of you will out there will know from being the eighth incarnation of the Doctor, not the ninth, as I mentioned earlier on in the show, I realised. As I said before, I believe he's seen as the longest-running incarnation of the Doctor due to the fact that he happened to be the person that was left with the role when it kind of disappeared off TV. He starred in the Doctor Who film and then made a reprisal in the Night of the Doctor little mini episode, as well as doing 70,000 audio dramas based around the Doctor as well, which is what he was sort of working on, keeping the flame alive for the for fans in between. He's also, of course, extremely well known for the classic British film With Nell and I. He's popped up in films such as Alien 3, The Three Musketeers, TV shows. He's appeared in Bletchley Circle. He's been in Waking the Dead. He's popped up in Jonathan Creek. Most recently, I think, he's been on Holby City. So you know who the guy is. You've seen him everywhere. Here's the interview with Paul McGann. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV.
Wow, this is like a press conference.
Charlie, they were scowling one like Jose Mourinho.
No. So, is there a universal thing like about the best thing about being the Doctor that all doctors agree on? And if so, what is it like? What would you say is the best thing about being the Doctor?
About playing the Doctor.
Yeah.
I think doing these shows, because these are the times when you meet the people that you make the thing for, and it's sociable and it's funny. I'm not saying they all are. Some of them are, you know, some of them don't quite work out. But when they're as well run as this, and you can hear yourself talk, and you know, we get a chance to meet the people. So that's the buzz, I suppose. For us, it's, you know, as actors, it's because it's the feedback. And quite simply, you know, you're in a room with all the people that love it like you love it. You know, so what could possibly go wrong? that's the best bit, you know. It is the best bit. If you're an actor and you're doing theatre, you know, the feedback's instantaneous. You know, you can talk to people in the bar, or you know, and that's great because, you know, everyone loves talking about their work, and well, most of us do. Or like with Doctor Who, for example, or say you were in Star Wars or whatever. You know, you're meeting the people that you make it for, and that's the best thing. You know, there's no other thing. That's the only thing.
Okay. In the recent episode of Doctor Who, Rosa, there was a lot of talking, lots on the fan forums. There was 2PC. What was your...
I didn't see it. Well, I saw the with the Jodie Whittaker one. That was the third of the...
Second
episode. Second. Yeah. No, I've got... It was the third. I saw the first one... where she was introduced, and I got the other two playing on catch-up. I've got to get home. I haven't been home yet. I don't get home till Sunday, so... no, I'm waiting, so no spoilers. Don't tell me what happens in it.
That's a shame. I wish there were the third one to watch. Yeah,
I didn't watch it. Yeah. But anyway, so I can't answer your question because I haven't seen it. That was a bit... That was Arsene Wenger, wasn't it? I didn't see it. I couldn't possibly... Not from where I was sitting, how could I possibly see it?
Should Doctor Who and sci-fi be political? Or surely it's been that way from the beginning anyway?
You mean...
That was probably the biggest takeaway from that most recent episode, not to spoil anything. It was just a very strong political commentary. And
was it?
It set a lot of people...
In some people's eyes,
yes. In some people's eyes, it was just a bit... Yeah.
The fact is, you know, it's a drama. It's a TV drama, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, the stories, you know, you're going backwards and forwards in time, and you have different eras. And, you know, you're making stories, you know, like all the best stories and like the best sci-fi stories. Often many of them end up being morality tales. There's only four or five ways to tell a story. And Doctor Who works best when, you know, you look in the first episode where Jodie came down. Now, for me, there was something nice and old-fashioned and familiar about it. The Doctor saw it in a bit of stuff on Earth, you know, and there's a little bit of, you know, between good and bad and a bit of a... So, by extension, I think you can hardly not involve yourself in political... I think there's a difference between matters that have a political aspect and party political politics. Doctor Who should never be party political. There's no need. And why should it? Because that would date it quicker than anything. But what's universal about it is that, you know, most of the stories, I mean, you look at it in any era, right from the beginning with William Hartnell, there's politics in everything. There's politics in all of the stories. Doctor Who had a family. So politics begins there. You know, and if you're going out and trying to sort out crime and good and bad and, you know, villains from goodies, you're going to get involved in politics. But I agree that there's no need for it to stray into party politics, but it never has, has it? Yeah. I mean, if it ends up getting involved in some of the stories, say in, you know, Earth conflicts, war and stuff, then I'm sure as a writer you'd have to be careful, you know, because you don't want to, you know, you wouldn't want to take sides. Again, I've not seen the episode you mentioned, so I hope they handled it with tact. I've heard very good things about it. You know, I've heard people sort of raving about it.
This series is on fire, actually.
She's brilliant. From the moment she arrived, I thought she nailed it.
Yeah.
We've all, you know, any of us that's played the Doctor has had to do that same thing. I'm talking about the first episode, you know, where it's necessary you spend that first, you know, you arrive and go, I've just woken up. I don't know who I am. Where have I come from? You know, everyone has to do that same thing. And she did it beautifully, you know, and she got through it, and she got through it quickly and then was into her stride real quick. She's obviously a superb actor. You know, anyway.
We've met her. She's,
yeah, I'd love to meet her. I've never met her.
She's bonkers. Which I think.
But she's technically really deft as well. You know, as another actor, like watching her, she's doing things immediately. You're going, wow, that she's just great. You know, she's completely. I mean, you know, look how Capaldi started, Matt Smith started, even Tennant himself. Mm. You know, he was a very confident actor. You know, if you went back to their first few eps, you know, they're feeling their way in. Mm. It's just the way it is. You know, you're stepping into something that other people have done before you, which is a little bit of pressure anyway. She didn't seem to have any of that. She just seemed to just dive in, you know, with humour. And that was the best way.
You had to do, because you had such a short period to do. You had, in many ways, the toughest job.
I had a weird job, but I think...
Because you had to nail it, and you're still remembered as the Doctor, which means you did nail it, and everybody enjoyed it.
I suppose when in 96, when we did that that telly pilot, that was almost a double weird job, because... it was meant to get a series off the ground in the States.
Yeah.
You know, so that was that huge departure. You know, if it had been successful and a series would have gone, you know, then well, I'd have belonged to them for 6 years, and we'd have made a series in North America. So the Doctor would have moved Lock, Stock and Barrel to North America. It would have been, you know, you can imagine. It didn't happen, which is why we've got Matt Smith, David Tennant, and all those, you know, since. But it was a strange pressure, you know, given that 5 years before they'd got rid of Doctor Who in 89. So, but the fans still existed. It'd been on for 20 odd years. And the chief remit, the job of this pilot was to find an American audience, which they were convinced existed. It seems mad to say that now, because that's where it is. That's where Doctor Who is in North America. But in the mid 90s, they were sort of convinced, but, and presumably they didn't watch in sufficient numbers that it made the ratings that got it to a series. So I suppose we had this dual objective of trying to appeal to this new audience, trying to sort of educate them in the thing, while not putting the noses out of joints of people back home, so to speak, who'd followed the thing for 20 odd years. And it never, perhaps it never quite, it fell between the two.
But with Paddington, they were a bit worried about launching Paddington, because obviously in America nobody really knew Paddington.
Well, yeah, it's always a tricky thing.
Look, what have we got now?
There you go. It could have gone differently, but there you go.
So with that entry into trying to break a new audience, plus being aware of this huge body of work that had come before it, what were the things that, like, you felt were really important to get that character started, the character that...
Well, no, we got all, it's a good question, and all we had... we had a pilot to make, and pilots, even had it been successful, the pilot would probably still have been distinct from what followed, because of, it's almost formal. You're having to say this, and, you know, and I can almost remember conversations that the grown-ups were making, the producers saying, okay, look, we need five things, you know, iconic things that we got to make sure that we include them. You know, they were having to do it by numbers almost. You know, it's a little bit like if you'd watched the first, the Jodie Whittaker's first thing, you know, there's, of course, a pressure to introduce new faces, you know. So, you know, the first ep of anything is what it is. And then, you know, then you can sort of get into your stride after that. And we never got further than that. So, and of course, there were ideas that I discussed with them, you know, this, we come back in October and we do this, that, and the other. You know, ways that over the years that we were going to play the character, but in this TV pilot, which they now call the movie, for reasons known, you know, we had to say we got to do this. You got to, of course, you had to have the regeneration that had to be there, and then, you know, then certain aspects of, say, the costume and the look, and then things that you say and things that you do, and how we finish it. You know, so we had to play it straight. It plainly, it wasn't enough.
I imagine they gave you a lot of prompts, but did you really remember what were some of the things you specifically wanted to try and put into the character back when it was all fresh and you weren't too sure?
Well, I'll tell you further back. When Phil Siegel, who was responsible for, it was mostly his energy, I think that's probably fair to say, got those companies together, Universal, Fox, the BBC. He got me to do it. You know, he wore me down over about a year, because I didn't want to do it. And when, you know, by the time he persuaded me to do it, it was mostly by dint of our having sat down and talked, and him selling the idea to me. You know, for example, the year before, you know, that when there'd just been rumours that Doctor Who might return, you know, and we'd heard, oh, have you heard Eric Idle's going to come back? He's going to be the... as the Doctor in America, or Rowan Atkinson is going to, you know... But at the time, it was stuff that... There were names, and you thought, oh, God, yeah, I could see that. Well, you sort of could, because it was within keeping, with what McCoy had been doing, and, you know. And then Siegel had seen me on the telly with my brothers in this period thing, and I was dressed as a priest from the 1840s in this long, dark fuck-up with long hair, and he'd gone, who's that kid? Because I looked like the Doctor, his idea of a Doctor. So now he's trying to persuade me to do it. But anyway, and initially I was going, well, hang on, man, those guys you're talking about, Eric Idle, and they're proper comedians, and they're this and that, and I don't do that. That's not what... He's going, I know. I know. I do this. He says, yeah, I know. So anyway, we had these conversations, and like most actors, I'm going, well, hey, you know, I think he's dark, and I think he's, you know, actors always say that. They're like, go for the darkness, and he's just nodding his head, going, yep, okay, we'll have dark, you know. Anyway, but he's letting me hang myself, and I ended up doing it. And so, in answer to your question, what probably would have followed, what certainly would have followed, I was more taken with the idea of the Doctor as a kind of, you know, he's not a fugitive, but he's left his home planet. He can't go back. Something has happened. There's been a schism, or there's been a, you know, and he's traveling, and he's sort of itinerant, and he's a voyager. And he's melancholy, and he's also, you know, he's got a human side. This was the more, you know, that half-human thing was a bit more contentious. I didn't know that at that. But not as contentious as when he kissed the girl. Anyway, so I found that out. But in the end, he said, no, we want a dramatic actor, which is what I rather arrogantly purported to be. But he said, no, that's what we want, you know. And as has been proved since, that's what he is. That's what you know. And Jodie Whittaker, like, you know, Matt Smith, is first and foremost, is just a really solid, lovely actor. That's what you need.
Have you ever played the With Now and I drinking game?
Do I look like the kind of person who has a death wish? That would just be insane, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah.
Have you ever played it? I've heard of people trying to do it.
A friend of mine is trying to convince me, so I just
don't do it. Why would you want it? And anyway, you'd get 20 minutes in, if it's even 20 minutes. But that's before the lighter fluid comes.
We're talking
enters.
About substituting that with vinegar.
That's what Richard Grant did. That was what was in the tin. But that means you've already got past 2 pints of cider and 2 large gins. You're going to be shit-faced then, right? And you're only 20 minutes in, aren't you? And you've still got an hour to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And you haven't even got to the red wine. What are you trying to kill yourself? Why would you want to do that? I think it's nuts. Crazy.
You returned for the web short, and there's
a web short.
Yeah,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The kind of bridge the gap between the War Doctor and his regeneration.
Yeah.
There's obviously a big thing at the moment with Big Finish. Is that something that you'd be interested in reprising the role as the Doctor for?
For what? For
a Big Finish.
I've done 150 Big Finishes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's been my whole career. I mean, the Eighth Doctor, I've shot on screen, I've been the Doctor for about an hour and a half in 20 odd years. Okay. I've done the pilot we were talking about and this 6-minute thing, that's it. But I've done 100 and odd of the Big Finishes. That's where the Eighth Doctor lives. He lives on audio. Yeah. So, you know, and again, to talk about your question before about, you know, particularly what me and Phil Siegel had talked about in terms of the character of the Doctor, the Eighth Doctor, the one that I was given to do, most of that's now been, we've put that into the audio plays. You know, all that sort of dark stuff and the melancholy voyager, whatever it is. You know, it's all in there. It's all in there. And we're going back next week. I'll go back and do some more. So, and that's just been continuous. I've been doing them since 2003. That's been 15 odd years.
Do you approach acting on audio differently to like TV or film?
Not really. No, it's storytelling. You don't have to learn the lines, thank God. You can read it out, and when we make the Big Finishes, generally there's a studio that we use in West London, and they've purpose built these wooden isolation booths, so 7 or 8 of you can work in the room at the same time, and there's glass in them so you can see each other, but we can all be on different channels, so you can sort of, and you sort of see them like shouting their heads off, and but we can look each other in the eye. It's great, you know. It's a great way of working. No, there's no. It's the same. You approach it just the same, except you're freed from having to pull all the right faces. You know what I mean? If you were on the telly, that's all telly acting's about. You just got to pull the right face.
Especially
next
to you.
Yeah.
If you were to have got the American show, if you could pick 2 or 3 actors from past, present, from Hollywood to be assistants, who would you want?
To be assistants?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Louise Brooks. Maybe I'll pick 2 women and a fella. Louise Brooks. Karen Black. You're looking at me now, blank. Oh, you're gonna, well, you can Google them when I've gone, right? Karen Black, I'm telling you. You'll thank me later. And a fella, how about... I was going to say Cary Grant, but he'd be too good for everybody. He'd be the best thing ever. Who played Little Caesar? What was him in the silent movies? Who was that?
Oh, James Cagney. Yeah.
No, Little Caesar... what's his name? Who? Edward G. Robinson. There you go, Edward G. Robinson. He'd be the best, man. He'd be a fantastic... I tell you what, he'd give Bradley Walsh a run for his money, I tell you, Edward G. Robinson. Or maybe the other way around. Don't you think Bradley Walsh is fantastic?
He's amazing.
He's spot on.
He was a revelation. I knew he could act. Me and Capaldi did a job with him years back. He came from football. He was a professional footballer. He's in lots of stuff. But when I saw that first ep with Jodie, and particularly where they got to that funeral scene, I thought, wow, that is as good as anything. He's beautiful and he's subtle. He doesn't give it away. And it's just like he's... I tell you what, that he's the quiet revelation. Yeah. She can do all that stuff, but he's going to anchor it, you know, somewhere just beautifully, I think. Yeah.
How was it recording the new audios for Sheridan Smith again?
That was a hoot.
Yeah. Obviously, you can't...
I can tell you, we had a laugh. Because that had been 6 or 7 years. Yeah. Since she'd been there. No, we had a real good time. Because, you know, we lost her to superstardom.
Yeah.
And it was nice of her to deign to come back and grace us with her royal... It was like a royal visit. It was great. And you know what I liked as well? For the first half an hour, she was nervous. Because it meant that much.
Yeah.
It was really sweet. You know, she's Sheridan Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any historical characters you like to meet in the audio book, like you like to interact with?
Historical characters? Don't know. David Bowie.
Yes.
Karen Black.
Interact is putting it mildly.
Sorry, just one more question. Yeah.
You've probably been asked a million questions over your career about everything.
Make it good then. It better be a good one.
Is there one question you wish someone had asked you but they never did? And if so, what's the question and what's the answer? What would you fans to know about you?
What would
you're going to regret that, make it good now, aren't you?
I'm regretting that now, yeah. I've dug a hole for myself there, haven't I?
You've got to come up with a good question.
I have, yeah. A question that I wish...
someone had asked you but they never did, or something you'd like our fans or readers to know about you, something you'd like to tell... your viewers?
No, there isn't one. And you know why? Because I believe that actors should have a little bit of mystique. I'm genuine. You can't give it all away.
I mean that. I've been asked.
Go on then.
I came from a 4-year-old boy once, and it was, do you see the invisible people? It's one of the kids I had to ask. Do you see the invisible people?
Yes. I'm a famous insomniac, seriously, for years and years, and so I have, when it's, if I'm in a bad bout, I would call them micro dreams, waking dreams. Yeah. I could dream now when I'm awake, and it means that, you know, and that's in a bad bout, and they might only last for 4 seconds. And in those 4 seconds, I've seen some invisible people. Let me tell you. It's really disconcerting. And it means, I know you talk to any insomniac, but it means you've got to, you know, of course you can't drive. It means you've got to leave the car at home because, you know, why would you want to? But yeah, so sometimes I get them. Yeah, I've seen some weird things.
Actually, that would drive me quite off. I wake up early because I'm worrying about something, but to not sleep in the night,
or to dream, like I say, to dream briefly while you're still awake.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's quite ordinary. I'll think that we've had a conversation about something, or you've said, and it might be someone of my kids or a friend, and they go, "What? I didn't say that." I said, no, it was 10 minutes ago, and they said, no, you dreamt it. And I literally have dreamt it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I've seen invisible people. I think I'm seeing them now. I think you're all... I think you're all in my dream, mate. And I'm, in fact, I'm lying in that hotel across the way there. Yeah.
All right.
That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to dig it out. I don't know what to say with now. I'm going to dig it out tonight.
Look up Kara Black.
To see it. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was the interview with Paul McGann from MCM Comic Con. There's a whole stack of video interviews if you want to go and see those as well. They're all up on YouTube now. If you go to youtube.com/geektown, you can find all the videos that we took from MCM Comic Con with people from Shadowhunters and people from Uncharted and loads of other places. So go and have a look through those. Now some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week on TV. We kick off with my favourite of the DC shows, Legends of Tomorrow, is back for its full season. That's on the 31st of October at 8 p.m. on Sky One. That returns. Ray Donovan, also a brilliant show, that's back for its sixth season, which sees him move from LA to New York, I think, in this current season. So that's on Sky Atlantic, 31st of October at 9 p.m. that arrives. Then we've got a really interesting new drama coming to Channel 4 called The First. It's a sci-fi about the first human mission to Mars. Stars Sean Penn. Looks like it could be really quite good, this. Channel 4, 1st of November at 9 p.m. that one is. Then one of the big shows, House of Cards, returns for its sixth and final season. That is back on the 2nd of November to Netflix. It sees Robin Wright as president for that season. Homecoming. This is a new show from Mr. Robot Sam Ishmael and Julia Roberts stars in that. It's a psychological thriller coming to Amazon Prime on the 2nd of November to see that. Also coming to Amazon Prime this time on the 5th of November, Outlander Season 4. That is back. So I know there are a lot of Outlander fans that are going to be very happy about that. It's a really, really good show. So we're glad to see that back 5th of November on Amazon Prime for Outlander Season 4. And then lastly, we have Stan Against Evil, the third season of that comes to Fox UK, and that is on the 6th of November at 11 p.m. for that. So that's the show for this week. I think we've covered pretty much anything, and especially Comic Con. If you want more from Bex, you can find her at...
You can find me on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and generally looking around confused under the name Trista Bytes, spelled B-Y-T-E-S, because I'm doubly geeky and thought I'd use my name to make a computer-based pun because I'm really bad at branding. Yeah, and I'll be putting up videos which are going to be all the indie comics, indie games, and coverage of the Comic Cons and that ginormous single take walk around of Comic Village. Please watch it. I was a complete masochist to do that to myself. And yeah, if people watch that, that will help me feel slightly better about using the entirety of my mobile data for the next 5 years. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show again. It's been great fun. And where can they find Geektown?
You can find us with your questions and comments on podcast at geektown.co.uk. You can find the website, obviously, at geektown.co.uk. Get all the latest air data information. You can leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, on Instagram at geektownuk. And you can find us on Spotify. If you go and look for Geektown Radio on Spotify, we will come up on there now as well. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.